0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. 51551 is our text number, and Joe with RT.ie. Monica O'Connor is in County Carlow. Monica, good afternoon.
How are you doing, Joe?
Good, thanks. And yourself? Well, I hope.
Thank you. Good. Yes.
Monica, the Taoiseach has said that the Enoch Burke case, we're not going to talk about that, obviously, is proof that homeschooling can cause isolation and that children should be educated in schools. You have homeschooled your 6 children.
I have indeed. They are now between the ages of 15 and 36. I've been home educating since 1986 when my first child was born.
And why?
Why? Because I just like my children and I like being with them, and I didn't want to miss out on their first word or their first tooth or their first step, and I didn't want to miss out on the magic of when they held a pencil and when they discovered that numbers made sense and when they could throw a dice and all that kind of stuff. So it was literally, for me, home education was the gift of time, and I really have been saddened to hear what the Taoiseach says, because I think it comes from a place of great prejudice. Home educators in this country are a minority, Joe. And, you know, I would imagine that our Taoiseach and our elected representatives are meant to be protecting all the people of the country and protecting Bunrock na hÉireann. It was actually, I went through school myself, did my leaving cert, did well in school, was in college and left to be a full-time mammy when I was 19. And it was actually an English South African family who educated me that Bunrock na hÉireann, the Irish constitution, specifically says that Irish people are primary educators, parents are primary educators. And that right is there, you know.
Okay, why do so few people take up that right?
I guess at the moment it's so hard to have the blessing of a parent at home with the child, is what I hear from young parents today, that they would love to spend more time with their children, but actually just to keep a roof over their head.
Okay.
They need two wages coming in.
What reaction, Monica? What reaction did you get when you said you were going to homeschool your children?
Curiosity is the first thing you get from people. Oh, actually, the very first thing people say, the first thing they say to my children is, "I didn't know you were allowed to do that."
Okay. Well,
so the fact that it's actually a constitutionally protected right
we've established that. But what other challenges did you face?
Challenges. I suppose people's perceptions, yes, that we sat at the table at 9 o'clock and we opened the Irish book at 9:10 and we opened the maths book at 10 o'clock and this kind of thing. So we did what's called unschooling. So basically my children, their education at the start looks very much like your kids' summer holidays. Like, it looked like Lego and painting and drawing and going to the park and feeding the animals and just life, just, you know, helping mammy make scones. That's the big part of education. I want my kids, I have 5 sons, Joe, and I really didn't want to send anyone out into the world who thought that it was somebody else's job to make them food. Do you know, I've reared some decent cooks, I have to say, because they were all there just hands-on. It was time. Really, it's the gift of time. And if you can give that to your children, it's irreplaceable.
But there's lots of children who went to school who are good cooks.
Oh, of course.
Aren't they?
There are.
And good at Lego and all
that. That's not the point, though.
But what about, Micheál Martin's point that it gives them? Now, again, an isolated perspective. You disagree with that. An isolated perspective in life.
Okay, I would say if I wanted to isolate people, I would put 30 or 24 4-year-olds in one class with one adult and from 9 until 2 and expect good learning to come for those 30 individuals.
Okay.
Our kids were not isolated. Our kids were out at the grocery store. They were out in the library. They were out at the post office. They were chatting to older people, younger people. They were going to home education meetups. They were going to sports clubs. They were going to music groups. They were going to orchestra. They were meeting people all over the place. And they didn't think that because you were born in the same year as everybody else, that was the only person you could speak to. I don't know about you, Joe, but I do not at 55 socialise with 30 people anymore. I haven't had to do it since I left school. And most people have a couple of close friends, if they're lucky. And that's how we don't need to think of ourselves. Maura Mullarney wrote, "Anything school can do, you can do better."
And Maura, bless her,
she said that unless you're going to join a religious order, or as my daughter says, an orchestra, or the army, you never need to think of yourself as one of a group of 30 outside of school. It's a completely artificial socialising kind of setup.
And then when you were, the curriculum, Monica, how did you, did they sit state exams?
Some of them did. I never put a child through the junior cert. Couldn't see the point of it. Okay. Apologies to all 15 and 16 year olds.
Who are doing their mocks at the moment. Expand that. Give me a few sentences on that. Please.
Yeah. What?
You can't see the point in the junior cert.
Literally couldn't see the point. So I have, like, one is 36, one is 29, one is 27, one is 22, one is 19, and the youngest is 15. And none have done a junior cert. None will do a junior cert. The first two did leave in cert and then did various courses afterwards. The next three did VTAC 5 courses. They didn't go to official education until they were 16, did a one-year course at 16 and got into university to do degrees that way.
Okay. So for some people, the junior cert does matter, especially and especially for people from less well-off backgrounds, because
100%. And we would have had at our home education network conferences. We would have Noah Jackson, Owen Jackson, Fionnuala Jackson, the XLC project down in Waterford, fabulous people, and they said the Leaving Cert doesn't matter. I remember some of the parents saying the Leaving Cert doesn't matter, and she looked at the parent who said that and said, with your accent, it doesn't. But she said to the kids I'm dealing with in Waterford, inner city, it does. It's the rite of passage that they need. But, I mean, my late husband assumed, he was a secondary school teacher, he assumed all our kids would do a Leaving Cert. I assumed they'd all do university. We were both wrong. Our children taught us, you know.
And you mentioned your late husband, which I'm sorry to hear. And he was a teacher?
Secondary school, yes. He taught metalwork and woodwork then. When we moved down to Kilcullen, there wasn't a metalwork outfit in the school where he got the job, so he taught woodwork and maths. And the longer he taught in school, the more he valued home education and thought it was a pretty great choice for our particular family and our particular children. What I did, Joe, because I know a lot of people are very nervous about what happens at the end, and I get calls. I'm the local contact for people who are worried about their kids not fitting into school and wondering what to do, and they're scared. They're so scared. And I was very, very blessed that 16 young home educated adults in Ireland had a chat to me, and I recorded that and stuck it up on YouTube. It's under my name, and they just talk about how they learned to read and write. Most of them didn't have parents who sat them at the kitchen table from 9 until 3. I know very few families who do that, to be very honest with you, in the home education context. Like most of the education, if you take the regular 4-year-old, Joe, they ask about 467 questions. Somebody counted it from one end of the day to the next. Now, as their mother or father, you don't need to know all the answers, but you just need to go on a journey and find out the answers with them. And home education, my children, has been the greatest blessing and the greatest education of my life.
And did you ever, because you have a different routine, as you said, and we'll go into that, but did you ever, when you say you'd be with your children of a morning at 11 o'clock, and obviously you're not in school, but you might have been walking to the park or coming out of a shop, do you ever get people saying to you, why aren't they in school?
Of course. Okay. It's a great conversation starter.
And what do you say?
I'm home educated, some of my children will say to them, or we learn at home, or we learn out in the park, or we learn wherever we are, or we have different, depending on whether somebody wants a one sentence answer or they actually want to go into it. Oh my God, you can do that. That's something that you're actually able to do. And how does that work?
Can you get state help, Monica? Can you get specialised teachers?
Joe, come on now. I would actually love if somebody crunched the numbers sometimes. So from 1986 until now, having never put a child into primary school, what my family have saved the country in capitation grants. I think it'd be a nice little sum. Wouldn't that be a nice little top up to my widow's pension?
So are you entitled to any, like a specialist teacher, say, if I don't know how competent people are in French or science or physics or maths, or math as they call it now, are you entitled to have a math teacher called to the house?
Not at all. It's very hard for people who actually need to get tutors.
You get nothing.
You get nothing. And it'd be very interesting now that school books are going to be free in this country, and people who want to have a look at the curriculum school books, whether that will be extended to home educators. There is no support for home educators. We save the country a fortune in capitation grants. We free up places in school. We make it so that there is a smaller, hopefully, teacher-pupil ratio in schools, and make it easier for the kids whose parents choose for them to be there, the kids who choose to be there, the kids who want to be there, who need to be there. And you know, there is absolutely no help or funding.
0818715815. Monica, where did you go to school?
Okay, so today is the anniversary of the first day I walked into a school in Ireland. I was born in Australia. I went to kindergarten in Brisbane, and I went to grade one in Australia. And my dad is Irish, and my mum Australian. Lord mercy on the pair of them. And we left Australia and arrived over to Wexford, to the farm where my dad grew up. And today is the first day I walked into a primary school in Ireland in 1974, at 6 years of age, with my Australian accent on me and my books from us.
What school was that?
That was Ballyfad National School, okay, near Coolgreny, Gore, County Wexford.
No,
and then
well,
I went
yeah.
to St. Mary's Mercy Convent in Arklow.
And did you like school?
I was very good academically.
Okay.
I was a couple of times I had fairly bad instances of bullying in school.
Okay.
But as I got older and as I found friends who were interested in the same kind of things as I was, that lessened, you know, and I had my parents supported me 100%, which was beautiful. And I had the gift, Joe, of a mother who said she didn't like September and us going out to school. She loved our company.
Okay.
And so my parents were particularly supportive of my home educating our children, and they my dad used to say it was great crack bringing my eldest off to the market or somewhere with him. He said he's great company in the car, he chats to me, you know.
He was at that 467 questions a day age.
That's when you need grandparents, God bless them, in their lives, because they have the time, the patience for young people asking all sorts of things. So why is the moon following us, you know?
Well, the main question I've heard lately from school kids is, Mammy, what's an air fryer? We're the only people in we're the only people in the area that doesn't seem to have one. What's an air fryer? But anyway, that's not the same.
Keeping up with the Joneses is a thing. Like, yeah, my kids wanting like the latest in runners and stuff like that was never a problem.
Okay.
You know, for
so
me.
What was your daily routine in so far as you had one?
Well, and now that we live in the countryside, it's get up in the morning and somebody feeds the dogs, and somebody feeds the chickens, and somebody looks after the heifer and the goat. And, you know, the animals okay. are the most important thing. Like, when people were babies, it was the baby needs help first. When daddy lived, it was before my husband passed, it was like, get daddy's breakfast and get him out to school. As we used to laugh and joke in the house, the only person we sent to school is the daddy, you know.
Did he ever throw a tantrum, God rest him? Did he ever throw a tantrum saying, no, I'm not going to school today? No one else is going to school. Why am I being sent to school?
Oh, yeah. I had enough of being designated as on teachers' nights out to see what it's like on the other side. And my hat is off to all teachers. And
you know,
the dedication is unbelievable. And what we expect teachers to do, like, when was the last time you heard of something being taken off the curriculum? We have a problem with cocaine in this country. We have a problem with driving. So we want driver's ed taught in school. We want drugs awareness. Do you know, parents who are home educating take all that responsibility onto themselves and say, it's my job, it's my right, it's my privilege, it's my absolute blessing to have had six human beings that God gifted me with for me to have at home mm-hmm. for the bit of time that I did. And now they're off in London and they're off in Montana and they're off away doing their own thing and living their own lives. I haven't kept them tied to my apron strings.
Okay, and do you mind me asking, have you any grandchildren?
I don't yet.
Got the sound of longing there. Have any of her children said at this stage, well, if I have children, I'll homeschool them as well?
One of my lads who did go into school and was in transition year doing Toastmasters, and he presented on home education, and he said, you know, it's a big commitment and it would be obviously up to parents and whatever, you know, but I'm glad I had the choice. And he definitely perceived school and being at home to be educated as a choice for him. And I thought that was lovely at 15 to hear that back from my son, you know. But you were talking about special subjects. Like, I have a 15-year-old at the moment teaching himself Japanese. I don't have a word of except konnichiwa. I don't know Japanese. I didn't decide to. He loves Pokemon. He loves anime.
Okay,
and
yeah.
He's there. Like, as a friend of mine who is home educated for amazing musicians up in Leash says, everything you want to know is all available online for free.
But it wasn't always that way. But then again, you need the iPads and whatever else you have in yourself. But the other thing as well, the pandemic surely gave a boost to homeschooling. Did it?
It's amazing. I do hear from families who say, well, first of all, that was lockdown remote mentoring is what was going on then. That was not anything that looks like home education or homeschooling for my family or the families I know. But it did give people a taste of it, and it did give some people I know have stayed with it and said, no, it gave us the push to decide that was the route for our family, you know. Joe, my young lad's about to go on stage here in the festival.
Oh, he's performing. Oh, brilliant. Do you want to... That is much more important than Liveline. I totally understand.
Sorry,
that.
Joe. You know what you are in the scheme of things.
Have you got to go? You have to go.
I'm
Monica. It's good to meet Monica. Slán, that's Monica O'Connor. Best of luck to you and all your children. Paul in Wexford. Paul, your point, please. 51551 is the text number.
Good afternoon, Joe. I just think what you call a homeschooling can stifle a child's emotional development. And sometimes parents lack objectivity. They're subjective. So there's a conflict there between parenting and schooling as well. And I just think it's quite unhealthy for a child to develop emotionally, psychologically, to become empowered. I think they need to be around other children, a tactile nature, psychologically, emotionally, being schooled with other children as well. And as I said, sometimes parents can be a little bit covetous. They think they know what's best for their own children, but really isolates the child as well, because they're cast adrift from their friends going to school on a Monday morning, Friday evening coming home for the weekend. And I just think it's not a great idea.
But have you any experience of that, Paul?
Well, when I was five or six, okay. I would have been lucky to be homeschooled, but my parents said, no, you have to go to school.
No, but did you ever...
I'm joking.
Okay, no bother. Did you ever meet anyone who was homeschooled?
I have met people who have been homeschooled, people that I knew of my generation, and there's a differentiation there between how people have developed as well. I think it does in some ways restrict their emotional development. It doesn't empower them. It doesn't strengthen them psychologically, emotionally, being at home, and it creates too much of a dependence on their parents as well. I just think it's unhealthy not letting children go out into the big bad world from Montessori, primary school, secondary school. I just think it's quite abnormal.
Maybe, but yeah, it's unusual. I don't know if abnormal is a word, but it's unusual. Say what is
well,
Paul.
I think it's abnormal in the right context. I don't say that in a derogatory way.
I know that.
But it's outside the norm, you know.
Okay,
we have schools, we have structures in schools for a reason for human beings to develop, and that's deprived of children. Children can't choose for themselves at that age. Oh, I want to stay at home, I want to be homeschooled.
And then I take the point that when you're in school, you learn to, I presume, negotiate yourself if you can around...
You find yourself.
...different instances, including bullying, including or watching how other people deal with it. Say with us, Paul, Joe at RT.ie. Anne, good afternoon.
Hello there.
Anne,
can you hear me?
Yeah, loud and clear. What did you think of what the Tánaiste just said about homeschooling leads to social isolation?
Yeah. Well, I've homeschooled my children since 2010, and one of them is autistic.
Okay.
And I found it actually very offensive. And I also thought it was very narrow-minded because, in particular, neurodiverse children would actually find the socialising side of school extremely difficult.
Okay.
And in many cases, very damaging. And I would say that a lot of the groups that I'm involved with to do with home education, that I regularly see posts up there from people pulling their kids out of school because they just cannot cope with the school system, and particularly when they're neurodivergent. And I thought there was a whole sector of society that was just ignored in that comment.
And Anne, can I ask you as well, why did you decide in the beginning? Was it because your child was neurodiverse?
It's funny because my daughter wasn't actually diagnosed until she was sort of 12, between 12 and 14. I knew that she wasn't ready. I just knew there was something about her that she was going to find it hard to cope. So I just kind of went down that path, and it was only as time went by and I just kind of was like, maybe there's something really going on here. And we went down the diagnosis route. Yeah. But she would have been so traumatized to go into that environment at the age of 4 and 5. My daughter had a really, really bad stammer between the ages of 3 and 4.
Okay.
And she speaks beautifully now. And I just, in the back of my mind, I think, would she be one of those autistic children that became voluntarily mute by being put into that stressful situation? My child didn't get phonics at all, and I taught her to read using a completely different reading method.
But is there any...
Because she was home with me.
But just, you said, is she one of those children who became voluntarily mute?
No, I said she could have been.
No,
she
could have been.
Because she... Yeah. If she'd have gone into school because she had this huge...
Well, do we know of many children who've become voluntarily mute?
I do know of one, yeah, and it was actually, and again, he turned out to be autistic, funny enough, another late diagnosis, but yes, he went in and got us down to phonics, funny enough. He went in, couldn't cope with the whole phonics system, and just shut down.
Okay. And I don't want to know the child's name or situation.
No.
But how is the child now, do you know?
He's fine. I mean, I know his parents, she kind of took over.
Okay.
She took over the approach to reading, and they, you know, they went, he had to go for psychology appointments, and they went down, you know, the sort of the roots of getting him a pet to try and bring him out of himself and all the rest of it. But yeah, and it, so, and this is what it kind of gets me. People go on about school as being this, but you have to go to school to learn to socialise. But it's not always the great best place to learn to socialise, in my opinion.
Okay. Stay with us, Anne. We'll be back after this break. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Homeschooling, Mika Brosnan. Mika, what did you think about what Tatiana said, that homeschooling can lead to social isolation, and he would prefer, he's saying inter alia, he'd prefer that young people went to school. What's your situation, Micah?
So we came out of school around COVID time. We did the school at home, you know, with the school during the first lockdown. And then we were going to go back to school in the September. And I just kind of knew there's going to be another lockdown here. And that's just like Monica said, you're kind of mentoring what the school are doing. Found that really difficult, just like everybody else. So we decided to pull out for a while and home educate. And we haven't looked back now. I have two boys, primary school age, and they're just really thriving now. Can't fault the school. You know, they were happy in school as well. But I would echo what Monica said. It's a privilege to have the time with them and to go on the learning journey with them. I think that's for me is the basis of the whole thing, is that you get to watch your child learn and help them to explore their interests.
So it's been a good decision.
It has, yeah. And it's always an open thing. You know, if they wanted to go back to school tomorrow, they could do that too.
And is there a place for them in school if they want to go back tomorrow?
Well, I don't know if there is now at the moment, but if they decided they want to go back to school, you have to homeschool for the rest of your life.
No, I thought you had an arrangement or something with the locals.
Yeah, no, no.
Anyway,
no.
Say there, Mika. Adam Lacey, Adam, your point, please. The homeschool or not homeschool? Go ahead, Adam.
I think it's possibly it's a luxury that a lot of people don't have. Maybe you'd love to spend time with your kids at home, educating them and not sending them off to school and having all these nature walks and teaching them yourself. But like, there's plenty of parents that are probably listening to this thinking, I'm working 40, 50 hours a week. I might be in the office 2 days a week. I might be at home a few days a week. I haven't got time to educate my kids. I have to send them out to school. That's the only time I get to do my work and earn the money I need to provide for the kids that I'm teaching, do you know? So I'm not sure what her position was. Was she earning money herself at the time? Or I think her researcher said her partner was a school teacher.
Yeah, but there's a lot of people she said that, yeah.
Yeah, so like a school teacher's income in Ireland, I mean, one income to educate your child at home, I don't see how it can work for people who are possibly, people are living in Dublin anyway. It'd be a very difficult thing to do, I think, to raise a family and have one income, not send them out to school.
So is your thesis, Adam, that there's very few less well-off people, or indeed middle-class people, given the taxation regime in Ireland, that could afford to homeschool their children?
Possibly so, yeah, absolutely, yeah. I mean, it all does sound very nice. And I know I heard the socialisation aspect, and there is a point to that as well. There's also a lot of people that'll be listening to this thinking about the Burke family, which has probably painted all this in a very bad light altogether. So I'd say she's struggling against that. And then the other side of it is there's people listening to it, and definitely I'd include myself, that have to send the kids out to school in the morning for their mental health more than anything else.
For the parents' mental health.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
to try and avoid the 467 questions a day.
I think so. I mean, I love my kids, but I shooed them out the door this morning. I was more than happy to send them off to school for the day, be educated by somebody else who could handle that after a hectic weekend.
Mika, what do you think of Adam's point that it's a luxury?
Oh, it absolutely. That's why I say it's a privilege, because it absolutely is a privilege. We've won kind of 1.4 incomes coming in here, and we're lucky to be able to do it at the moment financially. That absolutely, and I think most home educators would say it's a privilege. And on the socialisation thing, because that is a big misconception, I think it was probably harder 20 years ago to achieve the socialise. But like, my kids are going out to 5 different activities in the week.
Okay.
I'm like one of those soccer moms going around the place. You know, they're doing swimming, athletics, drama, and that's all mixing with mostly school-going kids. They have their pals that they've kept from in their school days, and we have new home-educating friends. And, you know, there's like Friday and Sunday are the only days in the week where we don't have something we're going out to, you know. So, and they, a bit like what Monica said, they get to meet all different ages of people. So there's no issue around socialisation these days. You know, it might have been harder 20 or 30 years ago.
Then has the technology helped?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's nearly too much help, because there's so much, such a wide variety of resources out there, different courses you can do, let's say for typing, if that's, and help for maths.
Well, Irish, you can learn, as Monica said, her 15-year-old is learning Japanese on his own.
Well, we're actually using Duolingo for Irish.
Oh, Duolingo,
this year,
yeah.
To help.
Okay.
Yeah.
What about state exams?
So that's the next journey for us, next part of the journey, you know, whether we will go junior cert, FETAC, you can do GCSEs if you wanted to go that route. Mm-hmm. You know, there's many roads, and we're coming to the stage now where we're going to have a good look at what is the road.
But if you decide on a state exam, then your curriculum narrows dramatically, doesn't it?
It does.
You have to stick to the curriculum. Because it's down to an exam based on the curriculum.
It is. And then you really have to knuckle down then. And but we have friends who are doing it and have done it, you know, from home. And I think the thing is, if you're doing it as a home educator, it's because you know the kid knows what they want to do, and the motivation. The great thing is they become very self-motivated, because they're not just going into school and going through the motions and coming home and having fights. You're self-motivated, and that's a brilliant life skill, you know.
Okay, let me bring in Stephanie Regan. Stephanie's a well-known psychotherapist. Stephanie, good afternoon. You contacted us because you say you do have strong feelings that homeschooling is not right.
I would have strong feelings about the socialising factor and the psychological developmental factor.
Okay.
I know lots of good points are being made, and I know there's a lot of good intention in the homeschooling, but what I also see, I see a number of things. I see that school is where we introduce the child to the world, and that brings in all sorts of judgments, you know, beyond the sort of the unconditional love that parents bring. You get a kind of a conditional love factor that comes in school, where you are judged for what you do, judged for what you contribute, along the lines of other people, and also directly from the teacher. Beyond the mother love, beyond the father love, and I think that's a very important thing. The other thing is, as a psychotherapist, I can tell you that I spend my life decoding and unravelling the limitations of parents in the way they bring up their children. And because we're all limited. I mean, I'm a parent myself, we're all limited. I'm sure my own child will be saying things.
But Stephanie, just to stick to the homeschooling, have you dealt with children or indeed parents who've suffered adversely because of homeschooling?
No, I don't. You know, I'm not putting forward here that I have direct knowledge, but I'm giving it on the basis of my you know, kind of deep and wide understanding of people over 35 years of therapy and dealing with what the kinds of problems that arise for children over time. And I do think there is a limitation, because parents of themselves are limited in what they can deliver the child. And I can see that, even hear that in what is being mentioned there. Mm-hmm. Many of the parents are saying, they're saying things like, oh, you know, not liking to put them out to school in September, bothering to have their time with the child. But is that good for the child? Is it good for the child having that very focused attention with their parents, and that not being dissipated and diffused out into the company of others over time? I would question that motivation. Mm. I would question that that is the healthiest thing for the child. It may be comfortable, but how is that preparing a child for the future? How is that preparing the child for, who will have to get up, you know, every day at 8 o'clock for work or 7 o'clock for work? It's about teaching them how to keep to deadlines, how to produce, how to be judged, how to compete, all of those things. And I think they can be really missed in the home environment. While well-intentioned, I think it has huge limitations, and that limitation is the parent.
Mika, do you want to respond to that?
I don't know how to respond to that because because I find that's very passionate. It's just like the way Micheál Martin approached it. It's very patronised. I know where Stephanie's coming from, and I think it's a big misconception about that kids have to go out to school to. I know what she's saying, right? And I understand where that, and I know it's coming from a good, well-intentioned place.
Okay.
But like, we're not lying around here in our pyjamas all day. You know, I actually do get my kids up and we're ready to get going at 9 o'clock. And I don't really know how to respond to that.
Well, take a general point that's coming in about children in school and children in society when they do socialise a lot, learn how to negotiate difficult and different circumstances.
Yeah, well, I
including
know like, my
what
kids
to do
go to athletics and they're with the coach at athletics. Oh. They go to swimming and they're with the coach at swimming. They do drama with, you know, I'm not with them 24/7. And I can see as they're getting older that they're going out and going. They do summer camps here in Clonmel or wherever they go. And I know it comes from a well-intentioned place, but I find that quite patronising and a little bit offensive.
Okay.
And it's not. It's certainly, Joe, not meant to
I know
be
that,
offensive
I know
in
that.
Any way.
I understand that.
I think there's well-intention on all sides, but I do think it's important just at a developmental level. We have learned over time that, in fact, elaborating the family system and having children in the company of a more diverse group is healthier. We also know that for children, and this is obviously not applying in any way to the speakers here, we know that children in the lower socioeconomic groups do absolutely wildly better to be out of the home and in the school system. So in many ways, the school system is there to be sure that children get out and get this sort of this elaborated kind of world, this introduction to more complex judgments, more systems that replicate in some ways the system of the world. And I would be just
you raised that point earlier, in fairness. What about Stephanie's point, Mika? You know, discipline, 7 o'clock, get to work, whether you work or whatever, farm, factory, office or school or hospital or whatever, but there is a discipline. You do, people have to rely on you coming in at a certain time and working until a certain time in a certain way. What about that discipline, Mika?
Yeah, so we, like, for instance, my husband works from home, so we all get up and we get sorted in the morning and he goes to work, like, and they would have, we did the school thing, you know, we did getting out the door in the morning, getting to school before COVID, and we still do, we have our routine and we stick to our routine because I found that gets the best results, you know.
When you say your husband works from home, but he gets up and goes to work, what does that mean?
I mean, they see that one has to get up out of bed.
Okay, but he goes
ready,
to work
at your desk,
in a separate
room,
or
whatever,
an office,
you know,
whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
But is that not straight to the heart of Stephanie's point that you won't find many working class families homeschooling because they just couldn't in terms of resources, even in terms of space, money?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I mean, it's back to... You know, it's not for everybody, and that's probably why home education is a minority thing, because for most people, it's either not a financial option or they prefer to...
And do you get any state help, Mika?
No.
No, okay.
No.
Maggie Power. Maggie, good afternoon.
Good
Good afternoon, Joel.
First of all, do you want to address anything Stephanie said, who, as you said, she's strong feelings against homeschooling in terms of socialising, in terms of negotiating the real world, so to speak. Do you want to address that first, or do you want to explain your own situation?
I could only suggest that she engages with some home educators and educates herself about what it's all about, because I think she's on the wrong track. And I know she has a qualification in all of psychotherapy, and I do think she needs to broaden her horizon a bit as regards home education.
Because you homeschooled your child from...
from 8 to 12.
Okay. And how did that
she
go?
She went... It was great. She's an only child.
Okay.
And, you know, there was consternation in my family.
Okay.
And with some parents from the school, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it really solidified our relationship, I would say. We've a great relationship. And she blossomed into her own person when she was out of school for that length of time. What really kind of urged me to do it was, you know, she'd come home. She was a reader from a very young age.
Okay.
And she could, you know, she loved books. Like, the library was the first thing
I
joined her in after she was born. So, you know, she was a reader, and the reading they were doing in school was way beyond that. And,
okay.
But they still insist that she had to do the few words. And it was very frustrating for her. And I kind of felt, you know, she'd say to me, this is the way teacher wants it done. This is the way I have to do it. And I kind of thought, I'd like her to have a broader view of there's more than one way to do something. So that's why I asked her, would she be interested in... And we took it week by week first, and then, you know, see how you feel. I gave her that option, see how you feel. And she was happy.
And you said
and
the reaction.
She made a load of things.
Would you give me, if you could, give me a glimpse into the reaction of your family, Maggie?
Well, I was told I was ruining her life, and that...
They told you.
It was
you
a horrible thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how did you react to that?
I was really upset, but I have an instinct that I trust my gut instinct.
Okay.
And after I got over the hurt, and I understood where it was coming from, that it was a protective thing for her, and they were worried about her, but I stuck to what I felt was the best thing for her.
And did your family...
You know, she made a lot of friends.
But did your family come round?
Oh, they did, of course.
No, I don't mean come round physically. I mean, did they come round?
No, I mean, what I mean is, you know, they saw the results, you know.
And what about this whole thing that, especially in Irish schools today, there are a wonderful, wonderful mix of cultures and backgrounds and
engagement. Why would you assume people, because they're home educated, aren't with other people? You know, they're other children. They're mixing with lots of different children. All the meetups, you don't know who's going to go to a meetup. You rock up. And they learn to actually make friends. In a natural way, I would think.
And when you say meetups, are these homeschool meetups?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so you'd
have one, say, we used to go to one in Carlow. It's still going on in the Big Blue Barn.
Is that not a long way for people to travel for a meetup, which would happen, which most kids have every afternoon?
I'm just talking about myself.
Okay.
And I would plan for these. And, you know, I used to go to Abbey Leakes as well. But, I mean, that's a plan for me, to have a day out with her, meet people. I would meet people. You know, we'd do maybe a science experiment, or we might, it depends. Everybody brought their own talents to those meetups.
And also, it was great to get hints and tips about things as well.
Okay.
But she read her way through those 3 years. Like, I mean, she had the, you know, she's really good at English now.
And is she doing her Leaving Cert in school?
Yeah. She went back in when she was 12. And she went to Educate Together in Carlow. And
why did she go back? Why did she go back in?
Our family situation changed somewhat, and you know, now she would have preferred to stay out. But then 6 months after, she said to me, "I'm glad I went back." I kind of said to her, "Look, you take it day by day, see how you get on." It was a hard year for her.
Okay. What was the hardest part? Without breaking any of her privacy.
I don't know. Like, I suppose she was used to meeting people who just accepted her for who she was.
Mm-hmm.
But I find in a school situation, sometimes it doesn't work that way.
Okay. And is she settled back into school now?
Yeah. She's enjoying it, and she's coming to the end of that formal part of schooling.
And she'd never, we
didn't do any of the curriculum, nothing.
Okay.
She did music. She plays the harp. She learned the harp. She actually, a homeschooler, was at the home education gathering, which is a kind of a 4-day thing, and people go on camp or they stay and they share their talents. And she, someone said to her, "Do you want to try the harp?" And she picked up a harp, and she had tried violin before that and flute, but the harp was her instrument, and
is that not one of the things that Stephanie's alluding to about school, that you will meet children who are other children who are into collecting Airfix models or playing the piano or following a particular rock band or whatever?
You don't have to spend 7 hours a day with them.
What about Maggie, doesn't apply. I was going to ask Mika. What about, doesn't apply in your case? What about if? Let me see. Is Eleanor? Okay, Eleanor Merriman. Eleanor.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Just let me ask the question I was going to ask there anyway. Yeah. Because you say you have 5 children, homeschooling for 4 years. What about sibling rivalry at home?
Well, Joe, just the point that the psychologist met there, Stephanie met. Was that not about confrontation? Was that not about how to deal with people and different personalities, that they're going to get that in school? That's exactly what happens in a home constantly. And they get to be able to resolve it very quickly. And when you're in people's company 24/7, you realise what's actually the root of the problem. That maybe somebody needs space. Maybe somebody is hungry. You know, there's always something that's led to that confrontation, as well as trying to deal with it in a healthy way, which is just using your own vocabulary and telling people what's actually wrong. You've done this. You've really annoyed me. You hurt my feelings. Whatever it is that how, you know, home educated people deal with things. And in regards to socialising, Joe, like,
which is what the Tarnisher said.
Children go to school. They're not allowed to talk when they walk into the school. They have to sit down and read a book until the teacher starts. They're not allowed to play in the schoolyard because of insurance reasons. So they come in straight away. They're not excited after leaving home, maybe. They're not allowed to talk. They have to sit down and put their finger over their lips in case they were unsure where their lips were to stop them from speaking. And they have to try and sit down and be quiet until the class is ready to start. Then they have lunchtime. The first lunch, they're not allowed to speak to each other while they're in the classroom. Would you agree with that?
And then
because the teacher is trying to educate anywhere from 24 pupils to maybe a large classroom of 38 pupils. And then they go out at lunchtime, they get to play for 10 minutes. They're segregated in their own age group when they are playing in a large school. So therefore, they're not mixing in a healthy environment with male, female, different age groups, how to resolve issues, how to help people if they're hurt. Mm-hmm. You know, all of these things with younger children and older children. And then they go back in, they're not allowed to speak again. And then they're back out for 20 minutes after eating.
Yeah, but then
And then they're home. So how is the socialising in that?
Even I'm thinking, Eleanor, like a lot of, especially particular age, they love their teacher. They idolise their teacher.
And I completely agree. And there's so many teachers out there that are phenomenal at their job, Joe. The same as in your profession and you know, any other profession. But there are ones that are not, you know, and it is not a healthy environment for somebody to be in if they dislike their teacher. And in small country schools, sometimes the classes are amalgamated and they could have the same teacher for 3 years.
Okay,
that's
understand
not
that.
A healthy situation for some people.
That's changing.
And also,
I just want to let Tracy, and I'll come back to you in a sec, Eleanor, I promise.
Yep.
Tracy, your point, please.
Hi, Joe. Sorry, I'm on the road between classes, so I'm rushing here. No, I just wanted to respond to the psychologist lady that was on earlier and just her viewpoint around school, kind of preparing you for, I think she said, the real world, you know, being up at 8 a.m. and out and et cetera.
7.
The real world looks different to a lot of people. You know, school very much prepares you for the factory life. In fact, that was how the education was set up. It was to look after factory workers' children. And it was to prepare you to be a good little citizen who gets up, goes into your job, doesn't raise your hand, doesn't open your mouth, doesn't, you know, speak. Now, I know the education system is changing and I know it's encouraged a little bit more. But the lady before, Eleanor, I think that she's called, everything she said is correct. There isn't a huge amount of chance for children to socialise in school nowadays. Whereas children who are homeschooled, there's plenty of chances. I'm a music teacher. I run music classes outside school. You know, there's plenty of teachers out there in the GAA, in music, in gymnastics. There's plenty of opportunities for young people to visit elderly neighbours, to play with younger siblings, younger cousins. So I don't necessarily feel that socialisation can only happen in school. And I also feel, as I said, that limited viewpoint where normal life is getting up and doing a 9-to-5 job. That's not everybody's normal life. My job doesn't start at 9, doesn't finish at 5.
Okay,
you know,
I understand. But for a lot of people, it does in terms of...
things are changing and should be changing. Not everybody fits that mould.
And Tracy, did you homeschool your children?
No, that's the thing. I'm defending homeschooling, but I didn't defend... I didn't homeschool my child. And I'll tell you why, because I wasn't disciplined enough, Joe. You know, I do think anybody who is homeschooling, you do have to be disciplined. And I know anybody normally that does choose to do it, they're choosing to do it for a reason.
Okay.
And be it that their child isn't maybe happy in school, and there's nothing worse than sending your child miserable every day to school.
Tracy, sorry, when did you come across, when did you come to the realisation that you should have homeschooled?
I knew fairly early on that I would have liked to have homeschooled. I just didn't feel that I had the discipline or the resources or the support at the time to do it.
And did your children know?
I've also worked with a lot of homeschooled children, and I find them very mature, very able to speak to their elders as well as their peers, and very open-minded because they're self-directed. At the end of the day, we all know the young fella that has no interest in maths but would be a great engineer or a mechanic. We all know the girl that has zero interest in languages but would be amazing, you know, researching, you know, something around medicine or, you know, letting children determine their own areas of interest and encouraging
that. Tracy, like, I want to know that if I go or have to, God forbid, go to a consultant or a doctor, that he or she knows what they're about, have done exams.
Of course, but they've went through that. But at the end of the day, Joe, most people of your generation, without being cheeky, left school knowing the 3 R's. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, I remember saying in maths for years, you know, master, like Joe, I was like, I'm never going to need this. Never. And I never did. I've never used algebra in my life. Still can't do long division. And I'm fairly happy and successful in life. So why did I have to waste my time in hours upon hours of algebra?
I guarantee.
That I didn't need.
You're a young woman, Tracy. I guarantee it'll come round.
I'm nearly 50 and I've never used Pythagoras' theorem, and I'm never going to use Pythagoras' theorem.
Well, it's very early to be giving up now on the isosceles triangle.
Listen, it really is.
It's only 3 days ago I went out and bought a geometry set because I wanted to play with circles. I know, sad, but true.
But that's
true.
Because it interests you.
No, it didn't.
Put me in a book with Jane Eyre, you know, when I was 9 or 10. Introduced me to Wuthering Heights. You know, I would have thrived. You know, whereas, so let the child at a certain age, once they've got the basics, let them figure out where their interests lie. Because lifelong learning is a thing now. It wasn't back in the day. There's always time to change. There's always time to go back to formal education, to university education, when you know what you're interested in and what you're good at. But anyway, I said it was more just to counteract that point that we all need to work 9 to 5. It's not the way the world works anymore, you know.
Yeah, I know. But still.
I'm sorry, I'm going to have to run.
Okay, Tracy, I got it. Okay,
go
to meet him, Margaret Slump, Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
The Food Safety Authority, we're talking to Brian there at 1 o'clock about the number of insects and bits of glass as well and bits of shellac found in different food items, but they were not supposed to be there. But at the moment, Lidl apparently are selling soya and insects patties, burgers, in other words, in Lidl. Lucy Glendenning. Lucy, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Would you help us, would you help our listeners by explaining, if you can, what they are?
Well, I haven't bought any.
I know that.
They didn't tickle my fancy.
Soya and insect patties for frying.
Yeah, soya. It's a big sign up over the frozen food section. Yeah. And a friend of mine had pointed out to me at first and said that they'd seen them. And I said, really? You know, I was very skeptical. I said, surely not. So I have to see this for myself. So I was in Lidl and I asked the girls and they hadn't actually even heard them. I said, I believe they're in the frozen food section. So we went down together and there they were, insect and soya patties. And the ingredients are soya and a crushed mealworm. So yeah, definitely wouldn't appeal to me, I have to say. And what I couldn't figure out was who are they aiming them at? I mean, what's the market? It's not vegans, obviously, because vegans, you know, the whole thing is to do no harm to any living creature. So you're not going to be adding insects to your diet. Vegetarians would be the same. Vegetarians wouldn't be eating, you know, living creatures that were living. I cannot imagine that your carnivores would be swapping over, you know, chicken.
Maybe it's for the new. It does it say on them, as it does on most things, are suitable for air frying? Is it the new air frying phenomenon that will be gone within a year, judging by what some people are saying about them? Is it?
I don't know. I mean, you can do lots of things in air fryers. I can't imagine that it would be specific to the type of thing that you're cooking in, as opposed to what.
Why won't you eat mealworm larvae?
Well, first of all, I am vegan.
Okay.
So I don't eat any animal products at all. But for me, Joe, even if I wasn't, I mean, I'm only vegan a few years.
Okay.
I think there is plenty of food out there, good food, real food, without adding more processed food, burgers, into my diet. I wouldn't feel the need to add them in. I wonder where these insects are made, where they come from. You know, are we adding more air miles on? I presume they're not produced bred in this country. Are there any consequences to, you know, there nearly always are, to producing something else en masse, any kind of farming, any kind of a creature, always has some kinds of consequences. Insects, I would imagine, are no different. You know, what are you growing them in? How are you killing them? And then how are you processing them?
I'm not disagreeing with you, but lots of insects do indicate a very healthy soil, don't they? Do indicate very...
Well, it depends on the insect. I mean, yeah, I mean, worms are definitely a very, very good sign of the soil. Generally, yeah, you want worms in your soil. But do you want to grow the soil? Do you want to feed the soil to feed the worms, to take the worms out, to eat the worms? I don't know. I mean, I'd prefer to leave the worms in
well,
there.
Do they, soil. But do they specify what the insects are?
Mealworms.
And what are they?
It says crushed mealworms.
And what are they? What are they? Are they like maggots?
I think they are. Yeah, that's as far as I know.
Sorry, where do they live? Sorry, Isabel, do they live above or below ground primarily?
I don't know, Joe. Okay, to be honest with you, I didn't because they didn't. You know, I saw them and I didn't kind of think, gosh, I must.
Find out more. Okay, Johnny Woodlock. Johnny, good afternoon.
Hiya, Joe. Have you
any idea where mealworms live?
The mealworms they're using in those burgers or patties, it's a mealworm larvae. Mealworms are a type of, I think I'm right in saying that they're a type of beetle.
Okay.
And it's the larvae of those. But mealworms themselves are lovely. And the whole point of this is that, I mean, it's the future of protein.
And larvae, hang on.
Are insects. You know, eating insects is known as entomophagy. And in some countries, if you go to Mexico or Cambodia, you will eat insects. You know, it's part of the everyday diet. A large part of the population of the world rely on insects for protein. And you can produce as much protein from insects from a 40-foot container than you could from several acres with cattle on them or sheep, you know.
So you're saying a mealworm is like a beetle?
It's a beetle's larvae. No, it's a larvae.
I know, but the larvae then...
The larvae is
between the egg and the
adult.
Okay. What does the larvae look like?
I suppose the best way to describe them is like a small caterpillar with legs at the front and a head in front.
And what do they taste like?
With mealworms, I've only had the dried ones, and they taste nutty. They're quite nice.
Crunchy.
And anybody who's kind of wondering, you know, oh God, will they ever taste them? Dried mealworms you can buy at a pet shop or anywhere for feeding robins and the like.
Okay.
And next time you're doing that, pop one into your mouth and try it.
The robin or the mealworm?
No, the mealworm.
Okay.
Just to try it. I mean, I feed them to Cub Scouts. I do a bush tucker trial with the Cub Scouts.
Okay.
And they're nervous of the mealworms because you can see what they are. And I used to cover them in chocolate or cover half of them in chocolate. But the Cub Scouts now, I realised fairly quickly, they didn't need the chocolate. And they devour them. They love them.
And they've all taken to the mealworms.
Oh, yeah.
But they're dead, I presume.
Oh, they're dead and dried, yeah.
And how do you kill them?
Most of the insect food that I know, what they do is they would put them in a freezer for an hour or so, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll kill them.
Oh, well, okay. And Lucy, would you object to that, the little insects being killed?
Well, the thing for me, Joe, is it's just unnecessary. I mean, for us, I completely get your other guest's point.
Johnny, that
insects are eaten in lots of places in the world. I've seen them myself. I've spent a lot of time in Southeast Asia myself. I've seen deep-fried things like crickets, which I know are going into food as well. And I know the Aboriginals eat a particular type of grub. And I always remember being told also that, you know, green ants were very tasty.
Well, the Food Safety Authority are saying we're eating a lot of insects in Ireland, but we don't know about it.
I don't know whether they're wrangling
their way into the... But anyway, I just think
it's, for us, it's unnecessary. It's just more, you know, it's just more producing of another. I mean, we're completely obsessed with protein.
But is it better?
And we can get protein in everything. I mean, I get all my protein from plants, obviously.
But is it better for the environment than methane belching cows?
I'm certainly all for reducing any kind of particularly factory produced animals. For our plates, but I'm not sure if I would prefer to go for real plants rather than introducing yet another farmed creature. For me, any kind of farmed animals, insects, you know, birds. They're talking about octopus farms now. You probably saw that in Europe. They want to introduce one. I think it's either in France or Spain. I mean, it's just, again, it's sort of more exploitation of creatures and animals, and I would prefer to choose something that's real, that we can grow ourselves, that's already available to us. And I just think that, you know, again, it's just more kind of...
Do you ever see yourself
on an industrial basis?
Do you ever see yourself, Lucy, that you would be hungry enough to eat one of the little insect patties?
Well, I probably not, Joe. I think we've been fortunate enough that we haven't, unless something apocalyptic happens. But I mean, you could say that about anything, Joe, couldn't you? You could say that about your neighbour, you know. I guess.
What, that you'd eat your neighbour?
Well, depending on how apocalyptic the event was, you know.
Depends on your neighbour as well. Johnny, what's the most unusual thing you've eaten in your bush tucker? Well, tell me.
In the bush tucker trial.
Well, now, what's the most unusual thing you've eaten, full stop?
I had mopani worms, which are a type of large caterpillar that were fried, deep fried, and then they're about the size of your middle finger. In Zimbabwe, deep fried and then dried. They were quite peppery. They're very nice.
With caterpillars?
Yeah, well, these particular ones are mopani worms.
Okay.
But I've tried lots of stuff. But if you look at it this way, if you were in Cambodia or Mexico or something, and you explained to them that there was nothing nicer than sitting down in front of a fire, sucking on a crew bean, they'd think you were mad.
I wouldn't be sucking on a crew bean either.
Oh, crew bean's lovely.
Pig's feet.
No, thanks.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. We have a statement from Lidl. And they say at Lidl we have a number of food teams that are introduced to offer for limited time, such as My Street Food Soya and Insect Patties, that allow our shoppers to experience different foods from around the world, as well as shopping our core range of Irish produces. With all Lidl, this product has undergone extensive quality testing and measures to ensure it is both safe to eat, but also meets our quality standards for our customers to enjoy.
Yeah, and again, Joe, if I may just come in there. I mean, as I said, I have been, and as John has said as well, we both seem to have travelled quite a lot. We've been in many different countries around the world. I think it's kind of amusing that Lidl would say that they're introducing foods from other countries. I can't imagine mealworm patties. I think this is probably a new, you know, I can't imagine that I've gone to Southeast Asia and out on the street there, they have mealworm patties. No, I definitely haven't seen that. I've seen insects in their own form, and maybe they've crushed them up and put them into foods. But I think that I find that a little bit dubious now.
Okay.
When I heard about it this morning, Joe, and your researcher rang me, I made sure to drop into Lidl's and get a pack of them. So I'll try them tonight. I'll put a couple into the air fryer, see how it goes.
And you have an air fryer. You've fallen for that.
I have,
you?
Yeah.
They
advise shallow frying, but an air fryer will cook patties.
And an air fryer will, you see. That's
oh, sure it will, yeah.
And how
well,
you...
Well, I'll try it.
Did you read...
I'm curious to try them.
Yeah, did you...
Because as I say, that's where protein in the future, I believe, will come from.
Well, I'm reading Terry Prawn, but I read it a few weeks ago in the Examiner, and I'm reading it again now. It's quite funny about air fryers. The air fryers, leathery rashers, scorched sprouts. It's the air fryer she bought when, obviously, she fell for the marketing we've all fallen for. And she said, "It's air fryer is a myth pushed by chip lovers who want to kid themselves that they're being healthy.
Well, I don't use any oil on them. I know you're mentioning.
Yeah, well, you're not, mate. I thought that was the thing.
Well, you give a little spray of oil onto them.
Yeah, he says, all an air fryer is cook the kind of small portions of chicken and salmon you wouldn't eat, you wouldn't ever have put in the main oven in the first place. Let's face it, in a fight between your frying pan, the air fryer, the frying pan's faster and easier to clean. Salmon, a disaster for her. Rashers were a disaster, soggy. Brussels sprouts were a disaster. You use what?
A liner. You can get liners for them. And for cooking sausages and, as you say, chips, but also strips of meat. I've cooked wood pigeon in them, wood pigeon breast, and pheasant. and they turned out lovely.
Oh God, they've really taken off, haven't they?
Well, I find them very handy.
Okay, back after this break.
They take next to no cleaning.
Okay, after this break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at rt.ie. James, back to... Is this air fryers or worms? Go ahead, mealworms.
Mealworms, I guess.
You think they're better for... the environment.
Well, I'd imagine there was one of your callers earlier was wondering who they're aimed at, and so definitely not vegans, definitely not vegetarians because of the nature. And the only argument I can see is that they mightn't have as much wind and may be an acceptable environmental way of getting protein.
Johnny, let's ask Johnny. Johnny, do mealworms fart? Johnny is speechless. Breed needs some breed. Oh, will you try these patties, James? Let me put you that way.
Yes,
you will. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I'm curious, food wise. Anyway, I would be a steak man, but not every day.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm very curious food wise, and I actually saw a notification of these things sometime last week. And I had kind of said, well, I'll give that a try, just see if they like it, basically. But, I think, when your last caller, I think, there said that it could be a viable way of supplying protein. I mean, I don't really have any problems where the way the protein is gained in. Some of it is in vegetables, of course. But, you know, if you go to China or whatever, they eat things over there that we would never dare eat, you know. Or other parts of the world, India, you know, Malaysia, they would have things on the menu that we'd never considered to have on the menu. So this is just another one of those, I think. You know, and like Bear Grylls said, plenty of protein in them.
But they eat dogs in China.
Joe, it's called entomophagy. Eating insects.
Yeah, okay. No, you didn't answer my question. Do the insects expel
air? Do they break wind?
Yes.
They don't, because insects don't have lungs. They get oxygen through spiracles, which are little tubes that go through them. So, do they fart? I don't know.
Okay, no,
that's the honest
answer to that. You got halfway to a good answer. Okay, back after this break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Air fryers have come up. Breed Nielsen in Dungarvan. Breed.
Hello, how are you, Joe?
You have it and you love it.
Because I heard you saying they're a fad. This will be another fad. And I actually thought that for the last few years I'd hear about air fryers and I thought this is another fad.
And when did you succumb?
A few weeks ago, they were on sale in Aldi.
Yeah, for next...
So I thought, look, I'm going to try it because so many people were praising it. I have a friend, Maria, and she couldn't stop talking about her air fryer.
Yeah.
So I got one, and Joe, they are fantastic. And the thing I think about it is if they save energy, which they must do, because anything you can put in an oven, you can put into an air fryer.
Okay, I'm going through the Terry Prone article here a few weeks ago. What about soggy Brussels sprouts, soggy rashers? You can only put one thing in at a time. They're very noisy.
No, they're not at all noisy. I couldn't get over that. It was so quiet. And it's like the time flies. When you put something into that and you time it at 45 or 50 minutes, the time literally flies. You put on an oven and you're waiting 10 or 15 minutes for the oven to heat up.
Okay.
And then, obviously you have to be a little bit savvy about what you put into it. I wouldn't be putting Brussels sprouts or broccoli into it.
What's the nicest thing you've cooked in it?
It's fantastic for chicken. You know, sometimes you'd buy two pieces of chicken stuffed, you know, chicken breast and rolled, or you could do it yourself.
Okay.
And you put those in and they are just so delicious.
Terry Prone was told you could do an egg in it and that was disastrous.
Yeah, well, come on, I wouldn't put an egg. I have a little egg cooker, actually, to save energy from Aldi. I do everything to save energy, Joe.
And she said they range in price from 60 quid, which I presume is Lidl or Aldi, to over 300 quid for the same thing.
Well, I got mine for 40 quid.
Ah, you got in early.
Yeah, I got it. That's only a few weeks ago. And I know that I think this weekend, somebody said to me that there was a double one in Aldi or Lidl for 59.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Yeah, and now you can get the very expensive ones.
Is it the best kitchen appliance you've ever bought?
Ever, honestly.
Are you serious?
I've been listening about air dryers or air fryers. And I just didn't believe the hype.
Okay.
And I just cannot believe it.
Okay.
Honestly.
Okay, Breed, how do you know if someone has an air fryer?
I don't know. Is that a joke?
Yeah, because they'll tell you. Good luck.
Yeah. Thanks a million.
Bye-bye, Breed. Annette Egan, producer Ray Darcy's next.
0818 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.